The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company.
Every week, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, that dumb fish who doesn't trust his gut, Paul Dana Jr., and Fletcher Page take you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium.
We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into the Deuce. This is the BBP 2, presented by 50 West Brewing Company. As always, Paul Eater Jr. here with my partner Fletcher Page, your Inquirer beat writers for Cincinnati.com, Cincinnati Inquirer. But Fletcher, it's special today.
That's right.
Real special. Because we're Inquirer synergy. We're crossing over. We're bringing worlds together that are sort of connected. My partner on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, Jason Williams, is coming in. He's joining the Deuce. This is a special day for me. It feels special. It's like watching your son graduate.
I'm elated to be here.
Yeah.
Do I get a free six pack of Doom pedal for coming on the Deuce?
Man, you know, you do. Anybody that comes on here, I feel like Optimistic Bobby should be hooking up with some beer. So that's potentially. Okay. I will say potentially.
Well, free means you're buying it for me.
I'm not buying you anything. Oh.
I actually drank all of our promo beer during Hugh Watch 2018.
Yeah, yeah. I think we all need more beer.
Yeah, that required a few few pops.
There's no doubt about it. They've been had pretty much every night once we get home nice and late. So you are here not just to talk about how great the That's Cincinnati podcast is, which it is fantastic. Thanks everybody that listens to that. If you don't, you should be listening to it as we get informed that Jason loves Richard Marx.
Oof.
Offense.
Man, you're killing it right out of the gate here.
Look, I just want people to know listeners. What they're getting themselves into. I want people to understand that these are the type of takes that are happening over on the That's Cincinnati podcast.
Do you guys talk about food on the Deuce?
Occasionally.
I think about it a lot.
I think we're usually hungry when we record it, if that counts. But no,
it's all football all the time.
So the worlds actually have sort of come together here this week with this deal that the Bengals made as far as adjustments to the pre-existing lease and helping the music venue get done. But there's so much more to it than that. We are going to get to Bengals Ravens because there's a crap load to get to with that, which has been an insanely busy week as the Bengals prepare for that. I've got Pro Football Focus, Austin Gale. We're going to get to him later. And we have From Beyond the Stripes. We have the hot seat with our guest Adolphus Washington. All of that is coming, but I want to start by talking about this. I'm just going to say this. I am still stunned and floored that this franchise gave up the $30 million plus pushing back all of the, you know, the fixes that would need to happen, the money that's all involved with that to pass 2024. $30 million was a part of the lease. What has been, this has been an issue hanging over the county forever since the lease was signed.
Yep.
And they just said, we're eliminating that. We're giving it up. I got to tell you, I never thought I would see the day that happened. What was your take on the news? Your column was up on Cincinnati.com right now. What was your take on that when you heard that this was the way that this music venue was going to get done?
So the Bengals, they really wanted to – they were not happy, I don't think, about how some of the PR went when all the news came out about Lot 27, which is on the, what is that, the west east side of the stadium,
east side of the stadium,
which was needed for this music venue. And
the bank side.
And I was very critical of them. It's about this outdoor concert venue. I was critical of them. It's like, hey, here we go again. They're not being a good corporate citizen. And they weren't I'm not giving myself credit. They wanted to make it work. And so they went and started working behind the scenes with the county administrators. I was told they took two proposals to them. I don't know what those two proposals were. Maybe it was a combination of what ended up coming out. But ultimately, they worked out that the taxpayer, the county, was supposed to start paying $30 million next year in payments over the next 9 years. And part of the deal here of the Bengals giving up Lot 27 to build this outdoor concert venue was for them to give up this. They also gave up $30 million in exchange for 15 acres over here on the other side of the stadium, the Hilltop concrete site.
That the county is going to purchase. And for people that don't know, and those of us that are down here every day, that thing makes no sense down here. It has no place down here.
It's a big ice. It's just such an eyesore.
Not only is it an eyesore, it spits out total garbage,
yeah,
industrial crap onto the practice fields over top of them, depending on which way the wind is blowing. Some days where you have all of your, you know, million-dollar athletes out there literally breathing in the crap that comes out of this concrete making facility.
Yeah. And for the people listening that who may not be familiar with this, but which I'm most Bengals fans probably are,
yeah,
is that this is literally right across the street from the Bengals practice fields right now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, it comes over into that. I've heard so many players complain about that. Obviously, everyone in the building complained, but nobody, but there was nothing they could forever.
Yeah.
There was nothing they could do about it. So the idea of this started being about a music venue, and it started being about a parking spots for tailgating, and it developed into so much more. And I just never thought I would see the day that they would get. Because look, how often this team is rightfully criticized for this lease and what this lease has done. And to take some of the worst parts of it, really, that have been the most damaging parts of this for the entire county, and just kind of throw it away. Now, Grace, they're getting stuff out of this. This is both sides giving stuff up, but that's
a business
how these
deal.
Things work. But to give that stuff up, I just did not think that we would see the day.
Well, there were people inside as we sit here in Paul Brown Stadium, there were people inside Paul Brown Stadium who for years knew or believed that the team was never going to see that $30 million, knowing the financial situation of the county and knowing some of the political players over there who have fought against the Bengals, Todd Portune, the commissioner, being the leader of that.
The end game, it would be ugly.
Yeah, the end game was going to be ugly.
Yeah.
So there were people inside here who said they would never get that money, and so we're going to have to try to do something else. And this is what they worked out. The Bengals, ultimately, by the Bengals giving this up, they're going to gain in. I mean, I think the idea is that they're going to gain in some PR goodwill here.
They hope
it's not going to be such a fight as the lease, as we go down the latter years of the lease here towards 2026, is that the storyline is not going to be them, you know, squeezing this $30 million out of the county over the last 9 years, especially a county that's broke and a county. The other part too was this was going to probably go to litigation, and that was going to get even more expensive for the taxpayers and for the Bengals. And I wrote today that this ultimately, that a long battle like that could have really been a death knell for them.
Yeah.
From a PR standpoint, and may have just said, everyone just might have thought, like, it's just go Bengals. We don't want you here anymore.
Yeah. Because that's obviously an issue. I mean, the disconnect with their fan base is a big part of who they are as a franchise right now. There's all of this negativity out there in the city. What kills me, kills me. I mean, it shouldn't surprise me, but it still does. Even just putting the news out yesterday that the Bengals decided to get rid of this $30 million and pushing the other stuff off and everything that came with this story, to me, an obvious shock, surprise, wow.
Yeah.
And one person, literally one person, now Twitter is a very dark, awful, ugly place, so I'm not trying to judge at that as a true pulse of fans. But literally one person said, you know, I don't feel like anybody's even taking time to do this, but to just for a second say thank you to the Bengals. And not that they'd want to thank you, or that's what this is about. But my point being, it was nothing but, yeah, but they're getting something out of it. This is some sneaky move, and this is just them trying to figure out a way to move out of here, and Mike's still cheap. That is the instant reaction with any news from that side of things, which is a point of where they're trying to come from, in that we're trying to make that not be the instant reaction that people think that everything we do has an ulterior motive. They understood the importance of the music venue from the beginning. They wanted the music venue. They just wanted to negotiate how you're going to figure out, you know, the parking spots and the arrangement of this thing that's going to go right next to their stadium. And obviously this is where that negotiation led. But I don't know if it's even a winnable PR battle, because there's so much. Honestly, if they win on the field, which is what they've said since day one, they'll start to win the PR battle off of it a little bit. But right now, there's a lot of negativity. It's just, you know, it's a clear effort. At the very least, and from you, someone who's been very critical of them when they haven't played nice, that's the biggest thing this is, right? It seems like an actual, very feasible, tangible effort.
Look, this is give the Bengals credit here for once. They did something that I don't think there's anything in the fine print on this one, is that what we saw yesterday come out is what it is, and that the Bengals are now fully embracing the outdoor music venue. In return, they get a 15-acre site that doubles their amount of tailgating spaces than what they had in the other lot. They get a big enough space to where if they ever want to build an indoor practice facility, which would be on their dime, which was already in the lease anyway.
Correct.
They could do that there and still keep all their grass fields. And then they also, in this whole thing, got, they're going to get $42 million worth of stadium upgrades. Now, they were already going to get that, but that's now capped. So they gave that up as well, because that could have been higher over the remainder of the lease.
This got much famous promo by John Oliver pointing out that there was a thing in there about holograms, right? Hologram replays happen. And that was sort of part of the joke, but it was just trying to foresee into the future. We want this stadium to stay up and not end up like old Riverfront, the pile of garbage that was back in 2000. That if half the stadiums in the league, or a certain percentage of stadiums in the league, have something, it's got to go in here. Yeah. Right? Have you seen the scoreboards around this loop? Like, they just put a new video board in, but you're dialing in on half the teams in this league having scoreboards like Dallas's.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the tip of the iceberg. We've been around here. We went to the Benz Dome in Atlanta with the Halo boards. Those are going to catch on.
Yep.
You've got and that's just the smallest bit of what you're talking about, the technology that exists in all of these new stadiums. That was going to be way more than that cap.
Yeah.
Way more than that cap. And so to cap that off is a big deal too. I want to jump into the indoor practice facility conversation, because this is a people love to talk about this. The Bengals obviously are the northernmost team in the NFL without an indoor practice facility. Everybody has one. They currently bus up to UC whenever they feel like they really, if it's snowing or whatever. Most bad days, they will go in and use inside of PBS. There are no plans to build a indoor practice facility right now, period. That's important to note. That somehow has been out there like, oh, they're doing it now. Like the news yesterday was they're building an indoor practice facility. No, they are not. That is not what's happening right now. They have been... Mike has famously been against this
since the beginning of time. But this does give them a very easy way to do it if they wanted to. They always could have if they wanted to.
Yes.
They could have in 2002 put a bubble on one of their practice fields and pay for it themselves. This just gives them more land and a place where they could do it. And maybe they will eventually. And maybe this does pave the way for them to do it. Important to note, though, they are not doing that. That is not something that they're like planning on doing right now.
Rick, that's absolutely right. Yesterday, some of the media coverage, and I'm not sure if it was the way the commissioners presented it, that somehow it got kind of cross-eyed in the sense that all of a sudden that the Bengals are going to be building a indoor practice facility, and that's not – you're right. That's not the case. I'm glad you clarified that. And that's always been in the lease. They've always had the option to do that, and you're right. Now they just have a bigger plot of land to potentially do that on.
Yeah, to do, and
that would be on their.
I will say this,
and it would be on their dime. It would not be on the taxpayers.
Absolutely, I will say this: the groundswell here of that maybe being a thing that will happen has surprised me. Again, it goes back to what we saw yesterday. I just never thought I would see this day where they give up that part of the lease and cap the improvements. Or that we'd be literally talking about here about maybe they will actually build an indoor practice facility, but it feels like that is something that they're warming to.
You know, and the fact
and
that they're
warming. And as someone who attends practice on a regular basis in the winter, can I please be out there with the shovel? The groundbreaking with the ribbon?
Oh, yeah.
I want a
shovel.
The
big wooden
as
scissors.
The representative of the local Pro Football Writers Association, I'd like to have a shovel on that one.
You know, the fact that they're warming to it and what happened yesterday, if you could sort of look at the big umbrella of this, there's a lot of signs in this whole thing that says the Bengals want to stay in Cincinnati long beyond their lease being up in 2026. I wrote today that they just gave up their trump card, essentially, because now with this $30 million, they're not going to have to fight about it. That could have been... had that gone to litigation and they fought over that $30 million, they could have just said, you know what, the heck with it. We're going to move somewhere
breach
else.
Breach of contract, essentially.
Right.
I mean, they would have.
And that would have been their trump and said, they're out. And all the people here would have said, good riddance. But now that's not going to be there. Those fights aren't going to be there. You got a potential indoor practice facility they're talking about. That, to me, says the Bengals are going to be the Cincinnati Bengals for a long, long time.
That was one of the first things that most people said. It was all that just trying to find a way to leave. I will tell you this. I have dug on this since I've been on this beat. 2026, the lease is up. Everyone thinks that they have 10 years of rolling two-year contracts on the lease that start.
Yep.
So essentially it's 2036. And I know that they're not going to be like, yeah, we're planning on leaving. But I'm telling you, I have never heard anything on or off the record from anyone in this building other than the exact total opposite of that, that they are doing everything. They want to do everything they can to assure that they never leave here. And they understand the finances of the league and how tough that is. But they feel like Mike, one thing Mike in particular is trying to make sure that it's set up as much as it can be. And that's why he's fighting what he believes to be the good fight with the league on certain financial issues with all these massive markets, putting them in tougher situations in smaller markets, to try to make sure that it does stay here and that this family does not do to Cincinnati what he felt like was part of what happened to him and his family with Paul Brown in Cleveland.
Yes, that's a great point. And I think Paul Dougherty wrote about today.
Yeah.
About Mike Brown is a really good guy. He does care. He cares about Cincinnati. He wants the team to be here, and I'm not speaking for him, but you know, certainly it's interesting. If I can, you brought up Mike Brown, Mike Brown had to be convinced on this.
Absolutely.
Mike Brown is a fighter. He's very by the book when it comes to this lease, and just by when it comes to his business,
legendarily stubborn.
Absolutely. And you know what? I know people have criticized him for it, but that's the deal, and he has every right to do that, mm-hmm. and we have every right to criticize him for it as well. But the fact that he was willing to relent on this, I think also he deserves some credit for that.
He does. And look, there's lots of things that you can criticize this organization for and Mike for and a lot of them that we spend a whole lot of time here doing.
football decisions, all kinds sure. of stuff. You know, all the game day experience, all that stuff. We talk about it all the time. This was a big – this is a – I don't know that people really understand how big of a deal this was for him to give that up. I mean, it's just
I mean, it's $30 million. Well, it's like
– yeah, that you negotiated to have.
Exactly.
And I, you know, it doesn't mean that they're you know, he's Mother Teresa. It means that I think it shows a little something that people probably didn't realize. Any other musical takes you like to throw in here before we let you go? Because we got to keep this kind of snappy. I don't want you to. Jason's notorious for, like, whenever we wrap something up, he likes to throw in a couple new extra things to really throw me off. But if you have anything you'd like to say while you're on the BBP 2.
It's quite a platform.
It is.
Oh,
it
Fletcher's is. Still here.
I'm back. Yeah.
I didn't know if he was still here or not.
He had a long bathroom break, came back.
You guys were still talking?
Yeah. I mean, we just were still going. We were still going. So if you have anything else you'd like to add, I will let you go and dismiss you. If you like,
I don't want to mess this up for the Bengals listeners, the Bengals right. fans listeners. So,
well, if you care about the city and you're interested in the things that go on, listen to the That's a Cincinnati podcast, because you know what, being a fan of this podcast and then just finding out about it here and then going over and then all of a sudden realizing there's this other great podcast, learning, becoming a better person every day. You know what that would be.
That's so Cincinnati
to do that.
And
this gag has not relented 11 episodes in, by the way.
I've been using the podcast to, you know, to get up to speed on the city.
Yeah.
And to stay away from things like the streetcar and whatnot.
Look, the streetcar is a thing that happened. It's good mold. It's not bad mold on there. I learned that as well. You shouldn't call it the Moldy Choo Choo because it's okay. It's not
the Mold Mobile.
The Mold Mobile. It's not. That's not the issue at all. But anyway, Jay, we got to move on and talk about yes. the game. Unless you want to talk about the game.
Got a prediction.
No, that's all you guys. Yeah, you guys do a great job, and thank you for having me on.
Thanks for coming, Jason.
Appreciate Wait, one more it. Thing. No, what? I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I don't. That's our thing on that. So Cincinnati, yeah. We'll leave it there. Thanks.
All right, we'll talk to you later. All right. Parting is such sweet sorrow, but we move on. There is football stuff. So maybe for those people that are not into that's a huge deal. And
that's interesting.
And important to talk about, even in this week of weeks. I was just like, when that happened yesterday, Wednesday, I just thought, can you possibly pile any more crap onto this steaming pile of a news week here? Why are they doing this to us?
You look fatigued.
I know.
There's a point where you drink so much coffee that it takes you from a hype or a perk to anxiety.
Yeah.
It's bad for you.
It is bad for you. I feel like we've been in total anxiety mode. And then sometimes your brain just quits and you have things like what we had on the original BBP this week.
You actually can hear you right now.
He actually can hear me because he's definitely here. We know he's here now. So that's what happened earlier this week. We assumed that he was in a room near us on when we recorded on Monday night, and he was. And now he is in multiple rooms, mostly the defensive room. Let's dive into this real quick. Like, how much real effect can Hugh's presence be on Sunday? The dude just
on
got
Sunday.
Here. On Sunday, the dude just got here. I get he's like going to help oversee things and communicate and, like, I guess, you know, help motivate, move men or whatever, lead men.
His energy is contagious.
A contagious energy. I mean, but how much of it? What is the potential impact? You wrote about Hugh yesterday.
I think that part of this narrative of this being a positive move is his intimacy with the AFC North. You know, he's been preparing to play John Harbaugh and the Ravens every year since 2012, and especially as an offensive coordinator for two seasons with the Bengals and as a head coach for two-plus seasons with the Browns.
Has a dub over him already this year.
Right. So I'm sure that can help. Now, I don't know how quickly
one of his three career dubs right. as a Browns coach.
Pretty big deal. So I don't know how quickly some of the things he could bring in could go down the line of communication, but it can't hurt to have him talk it up.
Yeah.
So I've been kind of trying to dig this week into that, what you just mentioned, the line of communication.
Yeah.
And what expectations can be for what this sideline is going to be, how this is going to operate, the logistics. Like, philosophically, I don't think it's something you can't handle. Like, if they go out there and they're playing more press man, which I anticipate, because that fits their corners better, and playing a little less zone, and maybe, you know, moving certain guys to certain positions a little bit more. That's all stuff that's typical, standard week-to-week things that you can adjust to. To me, it's the details of workflow,
right,
amidst chaos of a game day. And, you know, I expect people, everyone has, you know, Mike Tyson, right? Everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. There seems to be confidence amongst the coaching staff that they'll be fine in Marvin playing, making the calls, and that you'll have Hugh doing whatever he's going to do, which all anybody knows is that Hugh's going to do whatever he's asked to do for, to help Marvin. That's the closest thing we've gotten to a direct role. That, and he won't be involved with the offense until Hugh said, I mean, unless they want me involved in the offense, then I'll get involved in the offense. So who knows what the hell that's going to be. My point is, when it gets down to the fourth quarter and it's 17-17 and Hugh thinks he can do or say something to try to help put this team over the top, he is not the type of personality that just won't or worry about whose toes he's stepping on. That's who he is. And so I, you know, no one can quite, you just can't, no one can claim that you can quite predict how that whole thing is gonna happen. It could go great, and he could be a huge help. He could help motivate. He could help communicate. Maybe, absolutely. He's certainly been successful in that role here before. But no one can say that they can really predict that.
Can I please read Marvin's quote about Hugh?
Yeah. Make sure you read the question too, because I remember trying to keep it a very simple question of very direct
you
and
you
simple.
Even said, excuse me for being so direct.
Yeah.
But what is Hugh going to be doing
yeah,
here?
I was kind of trying to pull out of Office Space. What would you say you do here?
Right,
like that was kind of where I was going with it. But so I was just wanting to keep it simple. I wanted a simple question to hopefully get a simple answer. Go ahead and read what Marvin's answer was.
Hugh is here to, you know, right now he's trying to find, you know, just get immersed back into what we're doing, how we're doing it, and the added morsels to me about things he, you know, observes. That way he can assist with players on the field and with us defensively with the implementation and development of the plan, and, you know, he'll continue to look at things analytically. He's got a lot more exposure to that than I've had, and that's helpful because we have the data and just how they continue to use the data correctly. And so that's good. And he's been involved in that quite a bit. So that's another added plus exposure to things.
Makes sense to me.
I'm going to start saying
I totally
that.
Understand.
And so that's good.
It's a good thing. And so forth. Yeah. So, you know, morsels? He's in morsel management? Is that what we're to believe?
I'd just like to see Hugh bust into Marv's office and be like, I got a few morsels for you today,
more
boss.
Morsels. I've got seven morsels that I have collected. I'm strictly here in morsel management. I would say this week has been highly comical. I mean, part of it is us all kind of losing our minds from being here so long. And
well,
all
it started with Sean Payton smashing a fire alarm with a helmet repeatedly. He had aggression toward that fire alarm. It wasn't just to try to take the noise down. It was to, I think he felt good smashing that thing.
Oh, the fire alarm.
Because that's still not
the
resolved.
The fire alarm feels like 2 years ago.
That's still not resolved. I mean, he could get fined for that. And if it would have been you, you'd be probably I'd still have to come down there and bail you out of jail.
Would you do that?
Of course.
Yeah. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. It wasn't said with as much confidence as I would have liked, but I'll take that. I'll take yeah, of course I would.
I had to make a few calls and move some money around.
Yeah. Yeah. You never want to have to do anything where you have to move some money around.
Right.
You know, call your dry cleaning business or your import-export business.
Got to cancel that this week.
Yeah. All right. So we've got other stuff to get to, so I don't want to keep.
There's actually a game.
There is a game. Lamar Jackson is probably going to play.
Well, you know who's more desperate than the Bengals?
The Ravens.
You know who's got more things up in the air and in flux than the Bengals?
The Ravens do.
Right.
You know whose coach's hot seat is hotter than the current Bengals head coach?
Ravens.
John Harbaugh. Right. Is flaming.
And he won a Super Bowl.
He did. But he has not had much success in recent years, and most of it due to the Bengals beating them.
Right, and this could be the end of an era.
It would only be fitting that the Bengals would put the final nail in John Harbaugh's coffin, considering how many times they've kind of done it to him. You know, the Ravens have had more success in the playoffs. Obviously, I mean, hard not to. But I mean, you know, they've had those moments of success. But as far as consistency from year to year, look over the past 5-6 years, it just hasn't been there. And now Ozzie Newsome, you know, on his way out, and you got old, very old players. It really looks like they're turning over. And the only question was, would Flacco Harbaugh turn over with them, or would they start over there too? And at this point, if John Harbaugh can't find a way to get into the playoffs this year, he will not be here for, the encore.
Right, and just to throw some more things into the mix, you know, Lamar Jackson was not at practice during the portion open to the media
on Thursday.
So now
stomach,
we're talking about...
Had a stomach something.
Here's a guy that Hugh Jackson knows a lot about, Robert Griffin III. Running, everybody's coming out of the woodwork.
Flickers out of the end zone with RG3. That didn't go very well against the Bengals when he was the Browns head coach. Part of that mess, which I believe might have been the Adam Jones Terrell Pryor garbage game. Garbage. Terrell, you in there? Shaking the garbage can.
It's noted that you and Pac-Man have similar theatrics whenever you deliver. Just saying.
I'm very familiar with that moment. It was pretty memorable. But anyway, I still claim. So let's count up all the variables that you no way could freaking predict. Marv's now calling plays for the first time since 2004. Hugh's doing whatever no one knows. He's supposed to morsel gathering on the sideline. Who knows what that's going to entail? No AJ Green. Joe Mixon showed up as limited on Thursday, surprisingly, with a knee something. Bengals defense has been historically bad. Haven't tackled anybody. Lamar Jackson making his NFL debut. Desperate Ravens. That's a total variable as well. They could be pulling out all the stops. Am I forgetting anything at this point?
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. Every game down there is a total insane show. Dalton the Boyd last year, the miracle. Hail Marys. Fourth and one sneaks to walk it off. I mean, we have seen everything in that building. So all of that, I don't even want to predict a game this week. I will, because we have to. But there is do not listen to a word that I say or anyone
or
anybody, because if anybody tells you that they know what's going to happen on Sunday, they are lying to your face and they don't care about your feelings. Because no one knows what's going to happen on Sunday. But we do know one thing. There will be significant consequences to whoever can't get that dub. Because this is a massive game for both teams. That said, lie to people's face, Fletcher, and pretend that you know who's going to win. What do you got?
All right, I'm going to go with the team that's coming off the bye. The Ravens are 8-2 under John Harbaugh in games after the bye week. Not that that really matters, but I think the Ravens have a better defense. They're top five in quite a few categories, and Andy Dalton had 4 passing touchdowns against the Ravens in week one, but...
3 A.J. Green.
They are ranked, I think, 3rd against the pass. So, without A.J. Green, with now Joe Mixon, his status up in the air, I'm going to go with the home team.
Yeah.
I'm taking the Ravens. And I think we're going to see that bear out now. There's no line on this game at most sports books and betting places.
Right.
Yeah,
because nobody knows.
Because nobody knows the Lamar variable. Because they're not really coming out and saying it's going to be Lamar. They're trying to keep hope for Flacco and his hip injury, or at least smokescreen. Hell, Marvin was smokescreening AJ Green's going to play on Sunday, and that crap ain't happening.
Right.
Not even a thought of it.
And well, I think that with the potential for the Bengals linebackers to be Vinny Ray, you know, Jordan Evans, Hardy Nickerson. I mean, look, I know a rookie quarterback, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to put money down on a rookie quarterback in a game like this of this magnitude, but I'm not putting money down on that linebacking group either, so.
Correct. The question is, I mean, if all Lamar does is run, will that be enough? I mean, maybe we'll see more of a Carolina type of game plan from the Ravens, and that would not surprise you. Would actually probably expect that to really unload the entire Lamar Jackson college game type package. Bengals didn't do well with that, by the way, in case you're trying to go back to week three. We shall see. We just don't know. I'm predicting the Bengals to win 24-23, but none of it matters a word I damn say, because you know, I can't tell you. I'm going off of the history. The one thing I do know, there's really only one thing that I feel like I know about this team right now. I think if Andy Dalton has the ball last, the Bengals will win, because he's done it all year. It's the one thing they've done all year is offensively in the clutch. They've been phenomenal, and they've been great in the red zone, including against this team, and they have a history of beating this team. So I'm going to go with that. It might not matter. It might not even be close. They could get their butts kicked.
You're so positive.
I know. I hate it. I said I wasn't going to be, too. And now here I am, positiving it up. I hate myself even more.
Well, I've been keeping track. So you had double-digit win against the Bucks. You had going to cover against the Saints.
I did have a cover. I had them losing.
Both of which I went against.
I had them beating the Bucks. I had them losing to the Saints.
But was covering.
Look.
You said
this
one
is
score.
In Vegas.
You said one-score game, I think.
This is in Vegas. I was there. There is. I would like to be it to be even more on the record from my preseason predictions. I have only missed a single game on the Bengals' schedule thus far,
and that went in the positive, right? It was the Falcons.
That was Atlanta. So, and that was in my 9-7. Now I had them winning this week, so we'll see if it evens out where they go back to even on my 9-7. Because to me, I think this is a difference. I think this game is a difference between 10-6 and 9-7.
It's the difference between the playoffs.
Playoffs and not in the playoffs.
Right.
In my opinion, my humble, I'm just a guy who has access to a website and a blog tool. But that's just my opinion on it. All right, let's wrap up. We're getting to Austin Gale with Pro Football Focus. Really good stuff. So, you know, you stick around, listen to that. And then after that, Doc's Hot Seat with the Dolphus Washington was really good. Local product, obviously Taft High product. Really interesting stuff about growing up in Cincinnati and returning here. And just, you know, Adolphus is a great guy. And that I hope he sticks around for the long haul, because he's good for us.
Yeah, I always enjoy the hot seat, but I thought his was really good.
Yeah, no, it really is. So, anyway, here comes Austin Gale with Pro Football Focus, and that is followed by Doc with Dolphus Washington from Beyond the Stripes. You can watch the entire episode of Beyond the Stripes on Cincinnati.com right now. We'll, of course, have the walkout for you after the game on Sunday in Baltimore. Keep it locked to Cincinnati.com for all the rest of our stories. Pick up the paper for our game day section. We still issue a paper. We do it every day, actually. You can use it for things other than like kindling and crap. You can totally read them, and there's really good stuff in there.
I don't even have a bird anymore, so no. I don't have to line my cage.
No bird. No, it's probably because you got all that radon. A bird couldn't even live in your house.
Can't keep a bird in my house.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening to the Deuce, and we'll talk to you on Sunday night from Baltimore.
All right. We had to, because of a busy week, man. We had to push Pro Football Focus back later in the week, but there's still plenty of things to get into, still plenty of analytics to take a look at. So I call in my man, Austin Gale from PFF, Milk the Rhine. How are we doing, Austin?
Doing great, man. It's good to be on, even if it is late.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about what you see on the Bengals defensively. Obviously, there weren't many good grades coming from the game against the Saints. What was there? You know, I think everybody's looking at what's some personnel tweaks that could happen. Who are maybe some players, not just from the Saints game, but maybe even the last few weeks, that despite all the bad that's been happening, maybe deserve a little bit more playing time in a Marvin Lewis system?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you have to look first and foremost at the linebacker position, because that has been easily the most notable lack of talent from a position group standpoint that we've seen on the Bengals. I think along the defensive line, they're doing a good rotation. You have Sam Hubbard getting in. I'm not sure if I'm 100% on board with how much he's playing on the defensive interior. Yes, he's a versatile guy, but he's a little bit of a tweener, and getting him in that position has led to very poor grades and very poor pressure standpoint. I think maybe not a personnel shift, but play this guy along the edge. That's where he thrived at Ohio State. That's where he's thrived in the past. This guy was a safety in high school, a Cincinnati high school, Bowler grad. And now he's playing defensive interior at the NFL, going against guards that are 300-plus pounds. That's not an exciting matchup, but I think maybe moving him to the edge, maybe moving Jordan Willis inside a little bit more, makes a lot of sense. At linebacker, try anyone at this point. Practice squad guys, because Jordan Evans is not getting it done. Hunter Nicks is not getting it done. You need a breath of fresh air there, because everything else there is not playing well. And in the secondary, I think the talent needs to stay put. I think Darkie Snard getting healthy would be huge. Jesse Bates is playing out of this world, and William Jackson's in a slump, but he's easily your most talented cover corner. I think if he can rebound, this defense can turn around.
Yeah. So, taking a look at, so a little bit at, you mentioned Hubbard, and I'm kind of curious about how his numbers break down. I mean, how much have you seen him in the interior, and how different are his grades or some of the production you've seen on the edge specifically compared to the interior? I mean, is that obvious when you break down snap to snap?
Oh, absolutely. He's playing over 60% of the snaps in between the tackles, which is not something I expected in the slightest when he came out of Ohio State. This guy, I thought, would more likely move to off-ball linebacker before he goes inside and takes on guards and center, just because of how thin he is. It was a knock on him coming out, and I thought that would push him an off-ball linebacker position before it pushes him inside. However, when you look at, from a pressure standpoint, he has really struggled rushing the passer in a phone booth. It's very difficult if you're a smaller guy and don't have elite explosion. This isn't a Von Miller. This isn't a Khalil Mack. This is a guy that has had to work with his hands, be kind of a gritty pass rusher that gets a lot of cleanup pressures and fights through and high-effort guy. That high motor isn't going to help him a ton playing a position that he's really not played a lot against high-level competition. I think moving him to the edge makes a lot more sense than trying to get him to learn a new position right now. And if you are going to make him learn a new position, move him to linebacker.
Yeah. Offensively, the Bengals have been up and down. The last 2 weeks, though, you guys have had Joe Mixon with two of his best graded games. What has caused that? Why have you guys seen him in so much of a better light the last 2 weeks? Because his production has been, as far as, this year's standard stats, yards per carry, things like that, have been fairly similar throughout the year. But so what has ticked him up in your eyes the last 2 weeks?
That's great. I'm actually glad you brought that up. With Joe Mixon, it's always, with our running back grades overall, it's how much do you add to what's blocked for you? How much do you create after contact, force missed tackles, really add to the offense rather than take what the offense gives you? And Joe Mixon, through the first few weeks, great box score production, like you said, great yards per carry, but he wasn't forcing a lot of missed tackles. Him and Giovanni Bernard both ranked in the bottom five in terms of force missed tackles per touch, and that's never going to hit your high grade because you're only getting what's given to you. You're getting tackled on first contact a ton. But in the last few weeks, he's been shifty. He's been able to force a few missed tackles, get yards after contact, and really add to this offense. And I think you can say that with the eye test, but the numbers back it up. He's been able to make people miss and gain yards that weren't blocked from said tackles. And I think when he's doing that, he can be a top back in this league, as you've seen with the grades in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. Let's take a quick eye on Baltimore before I let you go. We've got Lamar Jackson on the other side, so who knows what is going to happen on Baltimore's offense. So let's kind of take a peek at their defense, which, was kind of living up to its reputation early in the year, but seen a fall off. What has been some of the biggest the biggest difference in their defense kind of not being as impressive as it was earlier in the year? Is it players? What's been happening there?
So from the secondary, in the secondary, Marlon Humphrey and Trayvon Young were out playing outstanding, way above expectations, but they've started to die down a bit. And even Jimmy Smith has not played as well as he did to start the season. They're not getting as much pressure on the quarterback. Guys like Za'Darius Smith were having really great years to start and are starting to come back down to earth. I think we saw earlier in the season that a lot of their players that haven't been great in years past start off hot and with great signs for the future, but they've really hit their regression line, really falling back towards the mean and seeing what the players they were in the multiple snap counts before this season. Kenny Young, the linebacker that they're starting, is great from a box score standpoint. Guy racked up a bunch of tackles, but he struggles in coverage and he misses tackles too. And I think you're starting to see these guys that, you know, maybe had better games in the beginning are starting to fall back to what we thought they were prior to the season.
Okay. Well, an interesting look. As always, I look forward to diving in after this week, and it'll be really interesting to take a peek at some of not just snap counts, but some of the production from how the Bengals defense changes with Marvin Lewis on the calls. We'll be taking a look at that next week with PFF. Of course, Elite Edge subscription, get your gambling on with the Green Line. Everything's there. People can go and subscribe to ProFootballFocus.com. They got it all there for you. Austin, thanks for your time, man.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Welcome back to Beyond the Stripes. This is a segment we call The Hot Seat. I'm Paul Daugherty. This man is Adolphus Fitzgerald Washington Jr.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a name.
Yes, sir.
I understand the Adolphus part. Explain to me the Fitzgerald part.
I don't understand any of it. I was named after my dad. That's all I know.
Is he also Fitzgerald?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Out of respect maybe for John Fitzgerald Kennedy?
Maybe. Maybe.
You don't know?
I do not know. I've never even thought about asking, honestly.
Yeah. All right. That's a good name, though. You have a son named, forgive me if I mispronounce these names,
mm-hmm.
Drazon.
That's correct.
I'm one for one. And a daughter, Amaria.
Yes, sir.
Can you explain to me the significance of those two names?
So, Drazon comes from my girlfriend's grandfather and dad. His name is Andre,
yeah.
And the grandfather is Mazan. So
okay.
They kind of, you know, mix that together.
Yeah.
And my daughter names comes from beginning with my name, which is an A,
mm-hmm.
and my grandmother that passed away, which is her name was Mary. So we just went with Amaria because it has M-A-R-Y in there.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So no Adolphus Fitzgerald Washington III.
No. I went through a lot with that name growing up. So.
Who would you be today without your father, Adolphus Sr.?
Who knows? Probably somewhere doing something I shouldn't be doing, honestly.
Yeah.
Honestly.
You and he lived together growing up.
Yes, sir.
And he had an entirely influential role in your life. Yes, talk sir. About that.
My dad did a great job at pretty much just making it seem like we had everything when we really didn't. You know, I never needed for anything, wanted for everything, because he always, I guess whatever, I wasn't really the type of child that wanted, you know, unnecessary things.
Right.
So I guess that's just the way that he raised me to not, you know, get the things that you need, not the things that you want. And growing up, he just made so many sacrifices. Like my dad went years without buying new shoes, new clothes, just to make sure I needed what I needed to go on AAU trips, make sure I had money to go on AAU trips,
yeah.
Made sure I, you know, had shoes and stuff for school and stuff like that. He made that sacrifice. Man, he some nights, you know, he wouldn't always eat to make sure I could eat. Sometimes
he didn't eat so you could.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. I witnessed that a couple times. Sometimes when the lights were off, we would have to go stay with my grandmother just because we could have, you know, lights and heat and stuff like that. So
it was not easy growing up for you, but he did what he could to make it better.
Yeah.
Okay. You also called him at one point when you were a sophomore at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Things were not going well.
Mm-hmm.
You said, "I want to come home," to which he replied,
"Well, if you come home, you can't stay with me because I don't take care of grown people. So, I mean, if you wanna come home, you gotta find your own place to stay. You gotta take care of yourself. You know, I help you out at the beginning, but eventually, you know, you gotta catch on to yourself. So I'm thinking like, yeah, I don't think I'm ready for that. So
I was gonna try huge, to stick huge it out. Wake up call
yeah,
for you.
I'm gonna try to stick it out up here and see how things go, and they obviously weren't good.
Well, back up a little bit. The reason I think he said that to you because he played at UC, mm-hmm. then quit.
Yeah.
Then went where like a junior college mm-hmm, and
Chicago.
Quit again.
Mm-hmm.
And he regretted that his whole life, and mm-hmm. he didn't want you to make the same mistakes.
Yep.
Okay, well, it worked out okay, right?
Worked out okay.
You were also an excellent basketball player.
Mm-hmm. I was okay.
You wanted to play basketball professionally initially.
Yes.
And then the only big-time school that offered you was Xavier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And so you figured maybe my future is in football.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever wonder what it would have been like? I mean, you could have been like the latter-day Charles Barkley, man.
Yeah. I mean, I still think about it. I still have those dreams, but... I mean, right now, all my focus is on football and, you know, like I said, I watch an NBA game and try to, you know, picture myself out there, but
yeah,
it's just a dream. So.
Do you think that LeBron James could have played tight end in the NFL?
I think LeBron James could have played any position.
Any position.
Yeah. He could have played offensive line in the NFL. Like, I feel like he's that physically gifted that he could pretty much come and just play.
What do you think it would have been like to tackle LeBron James?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I feel like I could tackle him.
You can handle him.
Yeah. I feel like I can. Yeah.
Okay. Mike Martin coached you at Taft.
Yes, sir.
Mike Martin was pretty much a saint at Taft High School, was he not?
I guess you can. Yeah.
You don't agree with that? You kind of hesitate a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, you were there probably 5 or 6 years after he revived the program,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, so maybe you weren't really knowing what was going on there.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think the first day when he asked for tryouts, he had like 8 guys.
Yeah, I did, yeah. So I have heard those stories.
Yeah.
Have heard that story.
And then he got like 70 guys, but only 22 were eligible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I heard those stories.
And he built it up into quite a program.
Yeah, him, Mike Martin, and Mr. Smith, that was the principal at the time, I feel like they definitely brought Taft back to life.
You know,
with the sports and the whole academic thing, definitely brought Taft back to life.
Mike Martin said about you, quote, he looked like a grown man when he was in the 8th grade. Now, what was the advantage for you, Adolphus Fitzgerald Washington Jr.,
mm-hmm.
in looking like a grown man in the 8th grade?
What was the advantage?
Yeah.
I guess the sports was my advantage. You know, I was just bigger than everybody. And a lot of people think I just got good in sports like overnight, but I really worked to be that good, like from like 3rd grade all the way up to now. Like I've always practiced basketball. The crazy thing about it, I've never practiced football. Like growing up, I used to just go out there and just play. But basketball, I really worked at to be good at.
Did looking like a grown man at age 13 or whatever get you into clubs?
I wasn't even interested in clubs.
You weren't? Okay.
No.
Did like 11th graders ask you to buy them beer and stuff?
No
advantages to that?
No advantages.
Okay. You Buffalo drafted, you played there 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo sucks, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
Roadies, we go when a Bengals schedule comes out in the spring.
Yeah.
I look at where the games are on the road
mm-hmm.
as to whether it's a good schedule or not.
Uh-huh.
Anytime Buffalo's on there, man, I got to find reasons to be sick that week. Do you have any favorite road trips as a player?
Because I don't really go anywhere.
Like, you can't go anywhere. You go to meetings and you go to the walkthrough and you go to dinner and you
pretty
go to
much.
Sleep.
Yeah.
Right.
So you don't really get to go explore.
Okay.
So.
Well, Buffalo is way down there. Buffalo's no good. Houston's not good. Mm-hmm. Kansas City, not good.
Yeah.
Your road schedule this year, in terms of my entertainment,
mm-hmm.
which is really all that matters mm-hmm. for the sake of this program,
mm-hmm.
not good.
All
right. You're from Cincinnati, obviously. I want you to be a tour guide.
All right.
All right.
I'm pretty bad with directions and stuff, but we'll see what we can
do. No. Okay. Favorite restaurant?
Favorite restaurant? Ruth's Chris. Yes.
Okay. Best place to take a date? Doesn't have to be a restaurant. It can be anywhere.
The movies.
The movies.
Oakley. I like Oakley's.
Oh, yeah. All
Cinema
right. Good.
Max, yeah.
Best cheap place to take a date?
McDonald's, I guess.
McDonald's. You've taken a date to McDonald's.
I've never taken a date to McDonald's, but that's a good cheap one, I guess. You can have anything you want at McDonald's.
Best place to take a rookie?
Whatever the most expensive restaurant in Cincinnati. Cincinnati is.
Because he's paying.
He's paying.
Yep. Best place to shop for clothes?
Well, me personally, I have to shop at, the local spots that we have here, and I shop at, it's this place called Exclusive up on Shorevine.
Okay.
It's a place on Hopple, Hard to Knock Shop on Hopple. Those are the main two places that I go shop
at. Okay. You go to the short and small stores, do you?
Get
your stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Best place to listen to music?
I don't
listen to music?
No. I mean, I listen to music, but not like at an extreme
Not a
level.
Place where you go to a concert or a club ring. Okay. What makes you proud to be a Cincinnatian?
I was born here. I was raised here. Yeah. I guess you just take pride in what you, at home. This is home for me. So I love it no matter what.
What makes you want to move?
I don't want to move.
You don't want to move?
I don't want to move.
That's good. That's a good answer for a television show.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you'd like to ask me?
No.
He's not interested in anything about me, boys. All right, you are off the hot seat, sir. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
We will be back from Beyond the Stripes.